Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. It's my pleasure to be with you, and I know it's a dream come true for you because that's what Joan Pride says. She says it's like a dream come true for her to be on my show, and she's back. You know, we didn't have Joan last week. We missed her. Jim Ostroff set in for her, but it was really kind of sad, Joan, not having you around. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. We missed you, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
You missed me too, didn't you?
Desperately. So desperately, I almost canceled my plans at the last minute so I could be on your show.
I can see that. I can see that. Jim Ostroff
was... And that's why I'm here just 2 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
Jim just kept pinching himself. And
yeah.
He just felt so lucky.
That's exactly right. No, I'm so glad you could be here. Yeah. Joan, one of the things... By the way, how's the city? Here we are hard by to the holidays. How's the city behaving this week? Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's been pretty quiet, except that the city has been consumed by the big controversy over Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
That has been all anybody has been talking about, and that's led all the
really?
Newspapers. Yeah.
And this is the deal over who pays for the stadium?
Exactly.
So what's the resolution?
Well, it looks like that they've figured a way out that the city would not be stuck with the whole price tag. But it's
the
gone
proposal, the original proposal was for taxpayers to pay for the stadium, right?
Right, and that was negotiated by the mayor. And then at the last minute, when the whole deal was supposed to be voted on by the council, the chairman of the city council came up with this other plan and added it as an amendment that Major League Baseball didn't like. And so you ended up with two camps of people. One camp of people, which kind of included me saying, hey, if she doesn't like public financing, she has a right to object and change it.
Right.
And the other camp saying, well, she should have objected a long time ago before it got to that point.
Right.
I think if she had an objection, she was perfectly in her rights to voice it when she did, but a lot of people don't agree with me. So then she and then Major League Baseball dug their heels in and said, oh, that's not the deal we made. Sorry, we're going to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So then the mayor and the city council chairman, Kropp, Mayor Williams and council chairman Kropp, sat down and hammered out a deal that sort of compromises, but leaves the city not completely on the hook, but partially on the hook.
So the other part of the hook is coming from the commercial venture?
Yes, that's right.
All right.
But, I mean, you know, once again, Major League Baseball wins.
Well,
because they're the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah. Well, of course, and a lot of people want there to be a baseball team in Washington. Where is the stadium going to be relative to Baltimore?
It's going to be right downtown.
It's going to
be in an area called Anacostia, on the Anacostia River, which would actually hopefully be a wonderful thing because that area of the city has been underdeveloped for a long time and in a horrible state of disrepair.
Well, now, let me ask you a question. Baltimore is north of Washington.
Baltimore is north, due north, maybe about an hour away.
Where is the stadium going to be relative to Washington? D.C., downtown Washington, D.C. Is it going to be north, south, east, or west?
It's going to be, I want to say a little bit south.
Okay.
It's right there.
Because that was one of the complaints that a lot of people had, is it should be as far away from Baltimore as possible.
Well, that's why a lot of people advocated putting the team in Northern Virginia. But the team will actually be literally in Washington, D.C.
Right. Okay. I don't know where that parcel is that you're talking about, that part of the city. I don't know where Anacostia is. Is it near the Rock Parkway? Rockway Parkway?
No, it's to the
that's
south.
That's not the right street. Not the right name.
It's to the southeast, really.
Okay.
Of the center of town.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that'll be interesting to see. But is it going to happen? Are the baseball teams coming there? Isn't it?
Well, the Expos have already been renamed the Washington Nationals, and they've
that's
already
pretty much a tip off, isn't it?
And they've been selling Washington National merchandise.
Right.
And the Expos had been told, you know, that they to get ready to come here. Now, when the city council threw its little monkey wrench in, everything sort of ground to a halt for a week or two.
Right.
And now things just seem to be moving again.
I remember when it was Washington Senators.
That's right.
That
well, you're dating yourself by saying
back
that.
Back in the '60s, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, you were just a child, though.
Oh, I was a mere child. That's exactly right. Well, that'll
Jim,
be interesting.
You were never a mere anything.
we'll be tracking that, and that'll be interesting to see. And I probably would go to a ball game in Washington when I come there, but where I wouldn't drive to Baltimore. Even though I like Baltimore, but while I'm in Washington, I wouldn't be likely to drive to Baltimore to a game, but I would come.
And
I would go to a local game.
Let me tell you something else. That stadium isn't going to be built right away. For the first 3 years that the Nationals are in existence, they will be playing at good old RFK Stadium, which is very close to the U.S. Capitol and right at a subway station.
Ah, how about
that?
So
you can come see as many games as you want.
Right, and what's being played at RFK now? Is it football?
Mainly soccer.
Oh, soccer.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's the football game somewhere else, isn't it?
Oh, the football game is out in the middle of nowhere in Landover, Maryland.
Yeah.
Even though they're called the Washington Redskins, they play at FedEx Field in Landover.
Right. By the way, now that we're still on sports, you were all giddy about a year ago about getting your old coach back. You were so excited. I've never seen you so animated about anything as when you found out Joe Gibbs is coming back. How do
that's
you feel
right.
now?
Oh, I'm still totally in love with him, and I'm happy he's here, and he's had a rough year, but they're doing better now, and they're going to do great next year.
Okay.
Nice try, Jim.
You heard that from the horse's mouth, folks.
Yep.
Okay, Jonas.
They just had to get the right quarterback.
Yeah, well, okay. All right. We'll, thanks for that update on the sports world there in the D.C. area. And I don't know anybody who could do it better than you, Joan.
Gee, thank you, Jim.
Let's talk about the year-end Kiplinger letter. It's a little bit about labor, isn't it?
Boy, it's a lot
about jobs. It's all about jobs,
right.
Isn't it?
That's right.
So what's the news?
Well,
what's your projection?
Now, just so the people understand, we're projecting out long term here.
This is not in the next month or so. This is maybe decades, some of it.
And this is something we do once a year where we take one letter and we just do one subject through all the whole four pages. And make it, usually our forecasts are talking about the next couple months or the next year, but this is much farther out. And we're saying that, in the short term, we know that there's a sluggish job market, but that's not going to last. And that, get ready for a labor market that's going to be a lot tighter mm-hmm. over the next several years because of that whole group of baby boomers that's going to start to retire.
You guys make some really good points in this letter that some of them I had thought about the individual issue, but never I had not thought about putting them together the way you
have.
Well,
that's why we're here.
Exactly. I know we couldn't do without you. But you guys point out that the labor supply will tighten dramatically over the next few years. Tell us about that.
Well, we're saying job numbers are only going to grow an average of 2.1 million a year for the next decade.
That's pretty
good.
And
the workforce is going to lag at 1.7 million.
Hold, stand by, Joan. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. It's 20 after. Joan Pride is our guest. Stay with us.
And nothing, nothing is going right.
We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you were saying something as we went to the break. I want to come back and land on for a second because I think it bears a little bit of emphasis. We're going to grow over the next few years 2.1 million jobs a year, but we're only going to have 1.7 million workers to fill them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I'm not real good at math, but I'm seeing a gap here.
This is not hard math here, though, Joan.
That's why I'm able to see the gap.
I think you can get this one, Joan.
You'd think.
So, here's one of the two things that I think is important. When I said you guys brought up some points about that I hadn't put together, that's a statistic that I did not know. We're going to be 400,000 jobs short each year over the next decade.
And that's even worse.
Not job short, but workers short
right,
of jobs.
Right, and that's assuming we get enough immigrants in to come up with 1.7.
Right.
See, that 1.7 is after we add in all the immigrants and the new graduates and everybody else.
But here's another thing that you guys point out, and that is that productivity gains are likely to ease in the coming years. And see, this is one of those little sleeper issues, Joan, to me that a lot of times we miss. One of the reasons why unemployment is 5.4% right now is because of productivity. We have all these new capabilities that is making our workers a lot more productive, so we need fewer people. Plus, we've got all these people who are not properly deployed because they don't have the training. In the years ahead, those people will get the training, and the new people coming on will have the training for the new jobs. And so, it would seem to me that we're not probably going to have a technology leap like we have had in the last 10 years, let's say. And so when you throw all that together, lowering of productivity, relatively speaking, relative to the last few years, and not having enough workers to fill the jobs, that's going to create a little bit of a crisis, isn't it?
Well, you know, I've always thought that the reason that Alan Greenspan has been going bald is because he's been tearing his hair out over the years over these productivity figures. They've been very hard to figure out.
He didn't believe them in the 90s.
No, he didn't.
He denied the productivity. In fact, we know he did because the whole Fed didn't believe it, did they?
Right. But now they've admitted that they underestimated productivity. Now they have to be careful not to overestimate productivity going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if we've got not enough workers to fill the jobs, you guys also point out, and I think correctly, that's going to put upward pressure on wages, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. So then you have to worry about inflation,
brings
all its own attendant
exactly. Part of inflation, another thing that's going to be inflationary, is I don't see how we're going to get through another 4 years without an increase in minimum wage, unfortunately. Even though I think it's a mistake, I'm going to be predicting that we will have a minimum wage increase over the next 2 years.
Jim, are you feeling okay?
Yeah, I didn't look. I'm,
ooh,
just because
you're not advocating it, just
no,
predicting it.
I'm just being a realist about this. And okay. I don't like the idea. But here's my point, Joan. If what you're saying is true about the upward push on wages because of the shortfall, that's the best argument I know for no minimum wage increase because it won't be necessary.
Well, and that's why I find your prediction rather interesting, because you do have a Republican White House and a Republican-controlled Congress for the next 2 years.
Well, I know, but I keep you're right. It's an odd situation, but I'm telling you. Never underestimate the power of Ted Kennedy to make things happen. I don't know. I just have a bad feeling about it. But anyway, let's move on down. Well, another thing I want to talk about is this generational thing, the wave of retirees and that are going to be turning 65. You know, we got about 80 million boomers, baby boomers, my generation,
right,
of which you tag on to the very end of that, I think, and that generation is going to start retiring, and over the next 10 years, a whole lot of them, many, many, many of them, most of them are going to be well into their 60s, and the generation behind the boomers is about 30 million.
Well, and we could do another whole show on what's going to happen to these boomers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we've talked in the past about employers who may want to try to keep some of these boomers on the job, keep their institutional memory and their know-how, so they don't have this brain drain when all these boomers decide they want to retire.
Well, and exactly, and I actually think, see, this may be the reverse, Joan, of what happened in the 70s and 80s. The corporate downsizing, the early retirements, all the different things that happened, corporate America lost their brain trust in the late 70s and 80s, and I think it was a big mistake when they let people out early retirement. They encouraged them to get out with early retirement to save a few bucks.
Right.
I think that was a mistake. We lost a lot of the old heads, and because we didn't need them because of the generation, the baby boom generation that was coming along. We had plenty of people.
This is
going to be the reverse of that, isn't it?
Yes, no question about it.
That's going to be very interesting. This generational wave thing, Joan, I know you've studied it yourself. It's one of the most interesting phenomena that I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. What have we called the boomers? They're kind of like, you know, the mouse that got eaten by the snake.
That, exactly.
And you see it moving through the snake, this big bulge, and that bulge is hitting their retirement years. And every time they've hit a different period in their lives, they've revolutionized whatever period that was.
Yep. And so we're gonna be going heading off into retirement, Joan, with a whole new level of savoir-faire, right?
Oh, no question.
You didn't know I knew French, did you?
I don't even know what it means.
Quick break, 29 after. You may say it again, folks. Savoir-faire. That's pretty good, isn't it? This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. Stay with us.
Do you say the same words to someone else when I'm not there?
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. It's good to be with you as always. And by the way, John O'Donohue is going to be here with us. He's our favorite Irishman. So we have our pre-Christmas show. Looking forward to getting John back on the show. It's always a lot of fun. You know, he always has some great poems. We're going to read some blessings from his books. It just wouldn't be Christmas without John. He's a great spirit, and I'm looking forward to that. We got some other things going on for you. And, of course, I'll have my own holiday message that I want to deliver, and I know that you won't want to miss that. Joan, you wouldn't want to miss that, would you?
Never.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things that I don't think I saw that you covered this week that I think needs to be mentioned, and that is this part, this thing about our people not being trained for the 21st century jobs. That seems to me to be something that is an opportunity, a political opportunity that the politicians have completely missed. A year ago, I predicted that one of the parties would pick that up as a platform plank and make it pay for them, and nobody did it. I was wrong.
Yeah, that's disturbing because that's how we're going to fall behind the rest of the world if we don't get trained properly.
Did you read Jim Glassman's piece in the Journal recently where he talked about the reasons why we may be in trouble? And one of the things he said was we're just not educating people to keep up with some of the rest of the world.
Wow, no, I didn't read that.
Yeah, and he's right. I mean, he was talking about how much poorer we are in terms of generating mathematicians and science people, engineers and things like that.
Wow.
And we're not keeping pace.
That's not good.
It's not good. And that was, he was saying, that's one of the reasons he said, he was saying that if the next generations may not live as well as past generations. And he said, that's something that's never happened in our nation's history. And he said, if it happens, one of the reasons might be because we're not educating our people properly.
Wow.
So that was a pretty strong statement.
Yeah.
But that's something we got to work on, folks. We got to make sure these folks, and Joan, we need to do it sooner than later, don't we?
Oh, no question about it.
Need to get on with it because because one of the things you guys point out that we're going to get over on page 2 is about the issue of how these jobs are going to manifest. They're going to manifest as service jobs, aren't they?
That's right. And no big surprise there, but
of
we're
course.
Saying areas like, and this makes a lot of sense. Healthcare is going to be the number one area. And you think about it, the boomers going into retirement, of course that's the way it's going to be.
Yep. And moving on down just a little bit there, obviously it follows that fewer manufacturing jobs over the next 10 years.
That's right.
So we got to have people. You know my story, Joan, about the paper mill that I told you about, the new paper mill that they have 400 jobs in that mill. 10 years ago, there were 800 jobs to run the same kind of mill.
Right.
And 100% of those 400 workers use technology in the direct employment of their deployment of their business.
Yeah. So between technology and outsourcing, you're really reducing the number of needed jobs.
Absolutely. And the ones we have, though, are different. Many of them are different. Joan, let's move back up to the top of page 2 just a little bit. Talk about some of the geography. You guys say that Florida and South Carolina and Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Texas, Colorado, those are some of the states that are going to be going to see the fastest job growth from now to the next 30 years or so.
Right. And we're looking basically at the Sun Belt because with the Rust Belt losing jobs over the same period.
Right. And Joan, also you're pointing out that some of the states that are going to have above average population growth. This is very interesting. Tell us where those people are.
Oh, states with above average population growth for the next, I guess, about 25 years are around the Rocky Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying from all the way up in Idaho all the way down to the Mexican border.
You know, it almost sounds like what I call the Daniel Boone effect, Joan. You know, Daniel Boone, what made him decide to move was if he could see anybody else's fire, the smoke from anybody else's chimney.
Right.
If he could stand in front of his house and see anybody else's smoke, he moved. He picked up and moved west. And you know, if you think about it, if you've flown over that part of the world out there, that part of the United States, there's a lot of room out there for people to live. There's not
sure
not.
Is.
You know, it's pretty wide open.
I don't know what he'd do today.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, we're going to take a quick break, Joan. And when we come back, folks, we're going to talk a little bit more about the job situation, which there's some more good information here. And there's a little bit of other information that the Kiplinger Letters put out this week. And we're going to talk about that, too. That's coming up right after these messages. It's 20 till. Here's the lilting voice of Tony Williams of the Platters. Take us out.
Something here inside cannot be denied.
It's getting near dawn. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and they got some outstanding publications, ladies and gentlemen. The Kiplinger Letter, which is now in its 82nd year now? It's 82nd year, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
82nd year, and it comes out every week. I get it by email. I get it also in the mail. I can't get enough of it. I just have to have it both ways. It's an outstanding document. Folks, it's a fixture. It is an American icon of information. And how about that turn of phrase, Joan? And,
wow.
And I encourage you to subscribe and to check them out at their website at kiplinger.com. They also have three biweekly letters, and those are the California letter, the tax letter, and which Joan knows a lot about, and the agriculture letter. Those of you who are those proud folks out there who are also my heroes, those farmers who are following that part of the world. They even have one for you. And also, then there's the magazine, Joe. Tell us about that.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And give us that phone number.
Right. Our toll-free number where you can order any of these fine products is 800-544-0155.
Tell them I sent you, and they'll give you the 30-day free trial.
Oh, yeah. They'll give you the store.
Of course, if you don't tell them I sent you, they'll be more likely probably to give you the 30-day free trial. I'm pretty sure they won't hang up on you if you don't say my name. There's always the question if you say my name. But anyway, folks, really, seriously, it's good stuff, and I encourage you to check out what they have. Joan, let's talk a little bit about a group of people who I predict, as they're organized, and I mean that not quite literally, as they're currently organized, I believe that will become a virtually a non-entity. You guys are using the year 2030. I believe within the next 25 years that this group will be virtually a non-issue in the American marketplace. You want to tell us what that is?
I think you mean the unions.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. Unions, the marketplace. Whether you think unions do a good thing or not, I think they have done good things. I'm not so sure they do now. But I will tell you this. The marketplace, the world, the global economy, at least as far as the way the United States is shaping up, is not lending itself to unionization.
Well, for unions to survive, they have to find themselves a new identity, and they haven't been completely successful in doing that. They've been trying to organize service workers, they've been trying to organize technology workers, and they've only had partial success.
But the reason, Joan, that the unions are I'm not even talking about the fact that we're moving towards services rather than manufacturing. The reason I think the unions jig is up is because of the way people think. People are thinking more independently. They're no longer thinking that I need somebody to take care of me. I need somebody else to make sure that my job is right. I need somebody if I'm mistreated, I need somebody to come in and take over my defense, et cetera, et cetera. Americans don't think that way anymore. They're Americans, whether they're employees or not, are thinking more entrepreneurial. They're thinking more that I can take care of myself. That's the 21st century mindset.
Well, unfortunately, though, you do still have employees who often are mistreated, and if they can't organize in order to get better conditions, that's a problem. So I still think there is a role for unions. It's just it's unfortunate that they are losing their power.
Well, there may be a role for unions today, but there's not going to be in 2030. And the reason is because so many of the things, Joan, that unions used to fight for now are available to everybody, whether they're a union or not, through some of the laws that have been passed.
Well, yeah, theoretically that's true, but I'm still concerned about, in some cases, low-wage workers who aren't treated properly.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of those low-wage workers are not members of unions today.
That's right.
Many of them are not.
That's right.
But anyway, it'll be interesting to see, and that's one of my predictions, one of my long-range predictions. Joan, you guys say that Americans will compete directly with overseas workers. Where did that come from? How did you guys? That's genius, Joan.
And you were surprised when you read that, right?
I said, wow, where'd this come from?
Yeah, we're on the cutting edge, definitely.
But that's going to be the case as we learn how to export labor, export and import labor, and not without anybody moving anywhere.
Right.
The work. We're moving the work around them. And Joan, as you've heard me say before, This is not what's wrong about the world. This is what's right about the world. This is our intellect developing new ways of doing things, and I don't see anything wrong with that. There are winners and losers, but fundamentally, this is a good thing.
And you really can't put your head in the sand and ignore the march of globalization. It's just not happening.
No, absolutely. Globalization is not some ugly political thing, folks. It's the trade manifestation of the advancement of our intellect.
That's what
globalization is. And outsourcing is the best thing, Joan, to ever happen to small business.
Well, that's interesting.
It is.
What do you mean?
Well, we're the king of outsourcers.
Oh.
We're the best at it. We're who in the American marketplace, we're the people that big companies are outsourcing to.
Right.
Small businesses are becoming big business partners. We're becoming the partners of big businesses, not just the little mom and pop vendors anymore.
That's true.
And that's the way to look at the 21st century marketplace, Joan.
Right.
In my opinion. And I know you agree with me, right?
Always.
Of course you do. Well, the one thing that won't happen, Joan, is that you won't be successful in the 21st century if you think about globalization and you consider yourself to be a victim of it.
Right, that's why I say you can't ignore the march of globalization. Mm-mm. You can't just assume that if you, you know, ignore it, it'll go away.
Right, right. There are a lot of things that I used to love that are not around anymore. And
musical groups?
Yeah, the Four Seasons, Joan. I miss the Four Seasons. But I don't have them anymore, but I can't help it because the world moved on, and I had to move on with it. Stay by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 10 till. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about some other things besides labor when we come back after these messages. Stay with me.
But I changed my ways. It'll take time, I know it. But in a
while. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, have I said Merry Christmas to you yet?
I thought you did at the beginning of the
Merry
show.
Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And since you're not going to be here next week, we're actually going to skip a week of Kiplinger.
I'm shocked.
We're going to do something else next week because you guys are consolidating some things this week.
Right.
But we'll see you in 2 weeks. But since I won't see you for 2 weeks, Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
But
happy 2005.
Yeah, but you're going to make a little trip, aren't you?
Oh, we're going to make a big trip.
In 1814, we took a little trip
down
to New Orleans. Remember that? Down to New Orleans? Remember that song?
We're going to New Orleans.
Yeah, what's happening down there?
Well, my husband graduated from Virginia Tech, and as I always tell everybody.
Which we can never forget.
And he loves the Virginia Tech Hokies more than he loves me. And they were the champions of the ACC this year, their first year in the ACC, when they were predicted to finish sixth. They won. And they are going to be playing Auburn in the Sugar Bowl. Excuse me, the Nokia Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, the Nokia Sugar Bowl.
On January 3rd.
And
we're
of course,
making it a vacation.
And, of course, there's nothing – I mean, there was no way he was not going to be there, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He's pretty much out of control, isn't he, Ray?
Completely out of control. He said that all my Christmas presents is going to be some form of Sugar Bowl memorabilia. and I'm not kidding.
You're pretty excited about that, aren't you?
Right.
He's such a romantic, isn't he?
I know, at heart.
Well, you guys have fun, and
thank you.
Have a good holiday while you're gone. Let's talk about flash memory cards. Have you got one of these?
The little I barely know what they are. I'm glad the letter's here to describe them.
The little memory stick things. These are the little things. If I'm not mistaken, what you're talking about is the little things that look. They're about the size of a pack of chewing gum.
Right.
And you can put. So what I saw one the other day was a gigabyte.
Yeah, which is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot.
It's a
of
lot
information.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
But you carry these things around, and they're pretty handy. I've got some. I actually have a couple of these. I don't use them. Because I just haven't had an application for them, but
wait
I could
a minute.
If I...
You have them, but you don't use them.
Well,
do you just like carry them around because you like them?
Well, I mean, I have them in my office. They're available to me if I needed to take something to your computer. But the thing is, with laptops, I don't, you know, what do I need to...
Take the computer. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but I do have them. But the thing is, this is something, you know, folks, you might want to pay a little more attention to if you haven't already. Let's move on down and talk a little bit about... This is all under the area of security, Joan. And one of the things that you guys report on is the all-out government assault on phishing. Tell us what phishing is.
Well, I love it. Yeah, I love this. And this is not the rock group fish, phish, and it's not the Ben and Jerry's fish food flavor. Phishing, I guess, is when you have cyber crooks who go hunting around on the internet for web addresses.
Yep.
Sending bogus emails to unsuspecting customers.
Well, and it's what it also is, as I understand it, is where they actually assume the identity, the URL, the web address identity of a company, and they appropriate that and make their own little email address that
it's
looks
like identity theft in a new form.
In a way, for example, let's say you do business with a bank, a national bank. They'll send you an email that makes it look like it's from that company, and they'll say, we need to verify your PIN number,
right.
Your account number and your PIN number.
Right.
Would you
so please
send us
type
that?
It in.
Please
yeah.
type it in. Go to click on this website and give us that. And people will do that, Joan, thinking
right.
that they're doing the right thing, and that's how they get their identities.
Exactly.
Folks,
scary.
I've said this before on the show. I'm going to say it again. Nobody who you do business with, nobody you do business with, who has secure information of yours that you've given them, like your bank or your insurance company or whoever it may be, your broker, nobody is going to ask you for that information by email.
That's right, and they will tell you that. And if you suspect, if you think you're getting a suspect communication, you call your bank right away and say, did you really want this information? And chances are they'll say no.
They never, you don't even have to call them, folks, because they didn't do it. And
right.
so don't give that information out. Just make a right. hard, fast rule. As long as I live, I'll never respond to an email like that.
Right.
And it's a big problem, Joan. And, you know, I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but have you seen the statistics on the level of identity theft that's going on right now?
No, but I can imagine it's scary.
It's startling.
Yeah.
Not only the numbers of people whose identities have been stolen, but the money that it costs them and the people that they do business with, the bankers they do business with.
Right.
It's really it's a major problem, and it's probably, Joan, a global issue that's happening all over, you know, people from other parts of the world that are coming in trying to do that now that they have access to the Internet.
Right.
Joan, thank you for this, and
thank you, Jim, for
another great year.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, we're going to start our seventh year, I think. You're the best.
So I'll see you in 2005.
There you go. Thanks,
Joan.
Thank
you, Jim.
See ya. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back, I hope. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.